Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Melio. Melio offers blood tests before, during, and after pregnancy, from non-invasive prenatal tests to general health checks, helping you and your family take control of their health. All Melio tests are conducted by trained professionals at locations throughout the UK, with the results sent directly to your phone or laptop. Plus, every test comes with a personal health report from a Melio doctor. Melio. The more you know about your health, the more you can do about it, and the best source of knowledge is your blood. To find out more or to find a location near you, visit meliohealth.co.uk/health-pregnancy. There'll be a link in the show notes. We've also recorded a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with Melio doctor Donna Fullerton, where we take a closer look at non-invasive prenatal testing. Check out that bonus episode in season 4 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast. This is an episode that I can honestly say I have dreamed about being able to make happen pretty much since the podcast started, you know, before, I guess, even its conception. I am chatting this week to my good friend Kelly, aka on Instagram, the Chief Cheese. Now, I'll let Kelly tell you her story shortly, but what I will say is that her and her partner Lee have been through so much over the years, and that includes hugely traumatic pregnancy loss through miscarriage, stillbirth, and termination for medical reasons. And I guess it's because of this and that Kelly and Lee finally brought home their daughter Edie 3 months ago that I wanted to share this episode during Baby Loss Awareness Week. Pregnancy loss is devastating, devastating. Not only because of what we've lost, but also because of the impact it can have on what might come next. The idea of getting through a healthy pregnancy can seem beyond the realms of possibility, and understandably so. As you'll hear, Kelly was terrified, but as hard as it was, she did it. And I truly, truly hope that hearing her story will help you to realize that as crippling as pregnancy after loss can be, that you can get through it. It does happen. One day at a time. And I want to remind you that you are never, ever alone. There is an entire community on Instagram, and I am here to support you every step of the way. And if you're listening to this during Baby Loss Awareness Week, and you're pregnant right now, and you're finding this week particularly hard, because I know when I was pregnant with Ren, we got our pregnancy test, our positive pregnancy test on the 3rd of October. So it was just before Baby Loss Awareness Week. And I really, really struggled to connect with it. So if you need to, it is okay to step away. You know, do what is right for you. If meditation is something that might help you, please visit my website, katstrawbridge.com, where you can download meditations specifically designed to help ground you through your pregnancy. They're adapted for ones that I created for myself during my trying to conceive years and my pregnancy journey. So I can honestly say that they helped me when I was pregnant. And I really, really hope that they can help you too. I'm also really excited to share that I'm soon going to be offering one-to-one coaching to support you through any stage of your fertility journey, your pregnancy, and onto parenting. Whether it's choosing a clinic, dealing with your pregnancy anxiety, coping with the impact everything is having on your relationship with friends and family, or maybe you're on maternity leave at the moment and you're struggling with the idea of leaving your little miracle and returning to work, I can be there to listen, hold your hand, support you, signpost you. Having been through so much of this myself, I really, really do get it. And I want to offer you the space that you need. Head to catstrawbridge.com/1-to-1. That's the numbers. The links for everything that I mentioned are in the show notes as well. This is the final episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast for a while, but there are over 60 episodes in the back catalogue where amazing people share their unique stories about being finally pregnant and finally parenting. But if you want to keep getting your fix of new episodes, I am recording exclusive conversations with experts across lots and lots of pregnancy and parenting areas over in the Hangout. Now, the Hangout is a community for people who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. And you can be there for the live recordings and ask questions to the guest. All you need to do is join the Hangout. And I can honestly say there are so many other benefits to joining, not just the podcast episodes. There are support groups, there are discounts, there is kind of everyday support and advice. There's our Champagne Fridays, there's just meetups. The list goes on. Head to catstrawbridge.com/the Hangout to find out more. And I can't wait to see you at a recording soon. Before I go, I have got a quick ask, other than to check out my website, which actually I redid last week. So it looks different. If you have been there before, it looks different now. But while you're listening to this episode, please do hit subscribe wherever you listen and give me a rating if you would, and even leave a review before you go. It really, really would mean the world to me. Okay. That's it for now. I feel a bit sad because, well, I think the podcast hopefully will be back next year at some point. But in the meantime, here is my lovely chat with my wonderful, wonderful friend, Kelly. Take care. Bye-bye. In addition to this podcast, you'll find lots of other support for the wonderful Finally community over on my Instagram at Trying Years and at catstrawbridge.com. Examples of that support include the Finally Pregnant yoga and Pilates courses and a wonderful community called The Hangout. When you join The Hangout, which you can do whether you are pregnant or parenting, you'll receive a free meditation, access to 24/7 support, invitations to monthly speaker sessions and support groups, discounts, and lots more. Find out more about all of the support available to you at catstrawbridge.com. There's a link in the show notes. Hello, Kelly. How are you doing?
Hello, Kat. I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad. It is an honor to have you on. Like, it is just my... ultimately, since I've met you, my life's dream, I guess, to have you on here because you have been through so much. And now that you are finally parenting and you are here and going to be talking to us about your experiences, you know, it's such a pleasure. It really, really, really is.
You are super sweet. Oh. Don't make me cry already, though.
Oh, stop.
I
mean,
it's just the start of the podcast. Gosh.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. How about we use that to go to the beginning of your story, perhaps? And if I can ask you to share a little bit about what the last few years have held for you, which is a lot. It really is.
It has been quite a bit, hasn't it?
It has. You've
been there for most of it as well.
A fair bit.
Well, gosh, so Lee and I Lee and I will have been together for 10 years this January coming. And for 8.5 of those, we have been trying to start a family. And probably all started off in the way that most people try and start a family. We had a little go. This was like, oh, this is fun. Get to do this quite a lot, don't we? And then it over time, it's like, oh, nothing's really happening. 6 months in, nothing's happening. A year in, nothing's happening. And we did what most people do. You know, we did our year of trying and then we went to the doctors and then we got dicked around for about 1.5 years, having various, I got sent for like internal scans and smear tests a million times, which I don't know what that was doing. It really wasn't telling me that much other than, you know, I was okay. And from what they could tell that way. And just, yeah, long story short, we finally got referred to see a consultant at Adam Brooks and had a lap and dye. And they said, right, if that doesn't fix your problem in 3 months, come back and we'll start talking about IVF. And 2 weeks before that appointment, I fell pregnant and we were unbelievably happy. And then I had a missed miscarriage at 11 weeks. So that was our kind of first trauma. And then we carried on trying and nothing happened. And then we got referred for NHS IVF treatment. And unfortunately, we didn't qualify for any funding because of some of the test results that came back. And then we ended up going down the private IVF route, which I know a lot of your listeners will have had to have done themselves. We ended up having 3 rounds of IVF. Our first round was massively unsuccessful and a real shock to the system, actually, because I don't know about you, but I just always thought that IVF was like the miracle cure. Totally. You know, you have IVF, you have a baby, right? That's what that's what all the papers say. That's what you read, and that's what I knew about IVF at that point. Yeah, very quickly realised that isn't the case whatsoever. So, yeah, first round was a spectacular failure. Second 2 rounds were all about banking as many eggs as we possibly could. And, yeah, one of those was a spectacular. The first one of those was a spectacular failure too. But we ended up with 6 embryos in the freezer and we had a frozen transfer and we had the amazing news that we were pregnant with twins. And, yeah, we're super, super, super happy. It was a difficult pregnancy. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't particularly straightforward. And there were some things happening that we didn't really understand and nobody could kind of really explain what was going on. And then, unfortunately, we lost those twins. I went into early labour and our girls, Lily and Ava, were born at 17 weeks and 18 weeks. And I can't bring myself to say that they were a miscarriage, although that is how they would be defined. So I always say that they were stillborn because I don't know why that, it just makes me feel better about what happened. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that changed our lives forever, really. Without dismissing that trauma, we then went on and had 3 more frozen rounds of IVF. Each one of those failed. We didn't fall pregnant with any of those rounds. And then in 2019, we decided to give it another go. And we went to a clinic in Athens and we decided to have 1 more, you know, fresh round of IVF. And again, really luckily, actually fell pregnant. But then we had our 12-week scan. And the sonographer discovered that the baby's nuchal fluid was just a little bit too high. So we ended up having to have further investigations. And our baby girl was diagnosed with both Down syndrome and Turner's syndrome, which the genetics team at Adam Brooks told us was so rare, they couldn't even explain the... They couldn't even describe, you know, the severity of the disabilities that the child would have. in the extremely unlikely position that she would ever live in the first place. I think that they gave her something like a 10% chance of her actually making it to birth. And so we had to make an incredibly awful decision to terminate for medical reasons, which again was something I didn't know a lot about. And I was only aware of by speaking to other, you know, incredible people that have been so open about TFMR in the community that we're all part of. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was rough. And then unbelievably, at the end of 2019, we discovered that we were pregnant on New Year's Eve, naturally. So the second time in, 8 years that we'd fallen pregnant naturally. And I think I can actually remember taking the test. I don't know, like we hadn't been, it's not like we'd even been trying, you know, it was just one of those weird things where I was a few days late and I just had a feeling. And we were going out drinking all day on New Year's Eve because, hey, we could, because, you know, we weren't doing any IVF, we weren't pregnant. And I remember the test coming back positive and I remember crying, not because I was desperate to go out and get drunk, but because I just thought, shit, this is not going to end well, is it? And that's really sad. It's really sad to think that about pregnancy, but actually know it. It's not just, you know that this isn't going to end well. And it didn't, you know. The baby died at 7 weeks and I miscarried at 9. We'd had a scan, you know, a few days before the baby passed away and there was, you know, a tiny glimmer of hope, but I don't know. I think I just always knew that that was going to end the way it did. So yeah, I miscarried in the middle of February and then we got slammed into a global pandemic a month later. So that was a jolly old time.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, honestly. Oh,
so much. Yeah, it's been a big old roller coaster. But we decided to have another round of IVF. Mm-hmm. And I flew out to Athens in October to have a transfer. And we now have a very lovely 3-month-old little baby Edie.
Oh.
Who I've just managed to get to sleep.
It's quite late on a Friday night that we're recording this, isn't it?
It is.
Oh gosh, Kelly. Like you say, I've kind of been there through an awful lot of that. And I know some of the impact that it's had on you, you know, from our conversations and from what you share publicly. And I just, yeah, that you even were able to go into another round. And like you say, it's one thing getting the pregnancy test, but then having the feelings about being pregnant, you know, like I think most people listening know that it is a yes, it's work, like I'm at the next step, and then oh my god, like now I know how much I've got to lose, do you know what I mean? And so that anxiety just like hit me certainly within hours of getting the positive pregnancy test that I got with Ren's round. And yeah, like the idea of facing a pregnancy, and it's horrible to say it like that, but it is, like, how did you feel when you got, you know, the ED round kind of thing? How did you feel when you got that positive pregnancy test?
So the way that I describe when we fell pregnant naturally that Christmas or that New Year's, I knew that that was going to end badly. Because it was the two of us and the two of us together, it just wasn't going to work. I can remember feeling, you know, I said, obviously happy. You've worked so hard. It's so hard to get to that point. It's exhausting, mentally and physically. And obviously we were happy. I don't remember feeling utter terror you know, at the thought of being pregnant. But I just remember thinking, well, this is just the start of something so huge. How are we going to get through this? You know, how are we going to, there's so many markers for us. You know, there's like, we've lost babies at 9 weeks, 11 weeks. You know, we've had terrible 12-week scan results. We've had, you know, stillborn twins at 17 weeks, 18 weeks. Like, when does it end? When does the fear go away? When are you ever going to believe that you're actually going to bring a baby home? Would we be able to feel like that throughout this pregnancy? And I genuinely at that point just thought, this is going to be the longest time of our lives. I couldn't even say the longest 9 months, because I just couldn't even bring myself to think that we would get that far. And it was just an unbelievably anxious time, you know? I don't think there was a single time, it sounds so grim saying it, doesn't it? I don't think there's a single time that I went to the toilet feeling comfortable about going to the toilet, because that's the fear, isn't it? When you've miscarried so many times, just going to the toilet and what might happen. And, you know, I'd say the same to Lee, and he'd say, but I feel exactly the same. I hold my breath every time you go to the toilet. No, that's not right, is it?
But it's, yeah, I completely understand it. And as a partner being in that position as well, just because it's not physically happening to you, but you've been there, you know, alongside together the whole way through. And it's interesting, yeah, that Lee is holding his breath as well. I can totally, totally understand why that would be the case.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it just felt like the start of an incredibly long journey, one that we really still had no idea that was going to be successful.
And as you say, quite often, and I know when I've spoken to people, and I certainly had this myself to a degree as well, you do have the markers of, you know, the loss that have happened before. And then you have the 12-week scan and the 20-week scan and the kind of normal pregnancy markers, you know? And then you have the other, you know, the other normal ones, I guess, the booking appointment and things like that. And then you have extra scans, because one might put them in, and we'll ask you about that in a second. But I know, and I have been very open about the fact that we had about 16 in, or 10 in the first 16 weeks. We were averaging once a week, once every 10 days. And so it's just like constantly, isn't it? And that can be what it is like. You know, I'm not saying this like it's a surprise or this is a unique situation, because a lot of the time, this is what I speak to, it's like almost that countdown for a holiday. You know, you see that calendar with the big crosses on it. Like, that's what we're doing for our pregnancy. And like, this should be the most joyous time. You know, we've all seen people go through it. We've all seen it on films and TV programs. We all expected when we went into our trying to conceive journeys that that would be us, that like skipping through. And I know from talking to people that just because you get pregnant naturally, it doesn't mean, you know, there's various degrees of anxiety as individuals that we have, irrelevant of our experience. But managing the fact that that's taken away from us and managing the anxiety, it's just so unfair, isn't it? And it's so much.
Yeah, it is unfair. It feels unfair. But it also it makes me feel anxious for other people more than I should as well. Like things, I don't know, you know, I think around about the same time we got to 12 weeks, I saw, I don't really use Facebook much, but I happened to be on there for work, and I saw somebody announce their pregnancy, and it was, you know, 12-week scan photo smashed up on Facebook. And I just thought, wow, I really hope everything works out. You know, it was the first thing that came into my head when I saw it was just like, wow, gosh, I really hope that goes well for them, because I'm frightened for them. And because I couldn't ever put, you know, a scan photo up at 12 weeks, because I would never dream of being so confident that that pregnancy would continue. I couldn't even be in that frame of mind. And that's awful. It's awful for me to think that about their pregnancy. It's awful for me to think that about our own. But that's just, yeah, that's just what it's done to us, really. It's kind of just robbed it of any confidence in, it's confidence in your body's ability to do what it should do. That's gone completely. You know, every week I'd be thinking, or every day I'd be thinking, you know, what is my body going to throw at me next? You know, what's going to happen? Yeah, it's really sad.
And talking about the, you know, pregnancy announcement, did you share your news? You know, did you let people know at any point that you were pregnant, or was it something that you kept relatively low key? I guess we were in the middle of lockdown, weren't we, or going in and out of it by that stage.
Yeah.
So how did you manage that?
Do you know what? This was the weirdest thing for us, because we've always been really open about everything that we've gone through. But when you do that, you make a decision to talk about the good and the bad. And oh my God, that is really tough. You know, having to tell people that you've lost a child is devastating. And when we've done it so many times, I just couldn't put us through that again. So we told our parents, and Lee's brother, my brother-in-law, and my sister-in-law, and a smattering of close friends, and that was it. We didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it on my Instagram account, and you know how open I've been with most things on there. I just couldn't. One, I didn't want the pressure on us of people knowing and asking questions, albeit, you know, kind and caring questions, but just questions. And mostly I just didn't want to have to tell people that we'd lost a child again. I just could not face it. I really couldn't. It's so unbelievably difficult when you've shared your joyous news with the world and you have to take that joyous news and burn it. Oh, it's just, yeah, I couldn't do it again. So we didn't really tell many people.
And I totally understand that. I have to say, when I went through our losses, although having said that, I'm just thinking about kind of having lost Ren's twin. So that was, although we hadn't told people that we were expecting twins at that point. So it was only kind of after we'd almost dealt with, you know, the initial aftermath of losing one of them that we shared. But prior to that, it was pre my Instagram days and things. So I haven't been in that situation per se. But I think it's important for people to hear that you need to do what's right for you. You know, and you have been open and you have shared previously. And in this instance, you decided not to. And that's okay for that to change as your journey progresses. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, if you choose to, you might have one successful pregnancy that you've shared and then get pregnant again and decide to keep that quiet for various reasons. You know, I'm not just saying it's, but I think it is really important that we all do what is right for us. Because I have talked to people about it. Oh, I haven't said anything. It's okay. You know, it's not a problem. People will understand. This community understands, you know, that we all have to do what's right for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I've taken a step back, you know, in other times as well. And I've publicly said, you know, I just think for me at the minute, it's not that I don't want to be part of this community. I think it's incredible. It's just I need to kind of protect myself a little bit, because there's been times where it's felt very much like all you're seeing is people's positive news, which is wonderful. And all I want for anyone that is part of this community that none of us really wants to be part of is for them to get what they want at the end of it. And that is, you know, if it's that they want their family in, however they need to make that happen, that's all I want for people, you know, is to get them, is to see them happy. But it is also really hard to be in that and not have those feelings of self-comparison. And I did really struggle with that at one point. It just felt, it's that feeling of everyone moving on. I mean, I felt like that before I even joined this community. You know, you could see your friends kind of all moving to the next step in by having their families or, you know, their second children and all of those things. So you already feel like that. And then you become part of this community where that's all that you want for people who are in it. You desperately want them to get their, you know, their positive and their pregnancy and their baby at home safe. But when you're not moving on and you're just, you know, struggling with stuff, that can be really hard to be part of as well. And I think, you know, like you said, it doesn't matter where you're at, it's okay for you to stop sharing or just decide that you want to keep some stuff to yourself. That's totally okay.
Yeah, it really is. So you didn't share much about your pregnancy, but you're kindly doing it now. Were there any moments of joy? Was there one scan that you thought, oh, right, we've got here, like this is good news. This is exciting, potentially going to happen. You know, what were the thoughts that were going through your mind?
I think that the only started to feel real, and I'm not going to say that there wasn't any anxiety past this point because there was a lot, but it only started to feel real past about the 20-week scan. For us was a massive milestone because we'd never reached 20 weeks before. So that was probably the one where we started to breathe a little bit. I cried the whole way through that scan because I was so anxious. And it was really weird. We had some really lovely sonographers, but this, I don't know about this one, was really, she kind of sang what was happening. It was really odd. It was making me feel really uncomfortable. It was like, I'm not going to try.
Oh, please do.
She was just kind of like, oh, well, this is happening and this is great. And this bit here is this. And I was like, what is happening? Oh, I don't want the singing. I don't want the musical version. But it was the only one that, yeah, any scan prior to that was just horrendous. I mean, it's sickening feeling in your stomach, just thinking, what are they going to say? You know, is something bad going to happen? So the 20-week scan was the one. I mean, I did genuinely cry the whole way through it, but it was a feeling of, okay, so if we get to 20 weeks, then there's only 4 weeks to go until 24 weeks is viability, right? Yeah, 24 weeks, you know, the 4 more weeks after that. And that was the kind of milestones, you know, it was like a week at a time, a day at a time. We couldn't look further ahead, you know, at the 12-week scan, we couldn't even have dreamt of getting to the 20-week scan. So it was all very kind of small incremental stages. But yeah, 20 weeks, that was where we definitely started to stopped holding our breath at that point, I think. But there's still a very long way to go after that.
And there is, you know, you've got the another half of pregnancy, you know, kind of mostly. I know that people give birth kind of earlier in some instances, but there is that. And tell me about like the mental health implications of this. You know, like I have been there crying through scans, certainly, or at least at the beginning of them. Like, that is because your anxiety is so high. So the impact on your mental health, and I know this, and you know, like you will admit this, I'm sure, and I'm the same. God, honestly, my anxiety was through the roof. What support did you seek? Were you offered when you were pregnant with regards to kind of the perinatal health team?
So yeah, we did. We actually have had a lot of support from the perinatal health team, and I know having spoken to a few people on Instagram, it's been kind of mixed. A lot of people have mixed feelings about the support that's been offered, but I have to say, I think we lucked out really. My midwife did refer us quite early on because of past traumas. And I guess I was really worried. I was really worried about how my anxiety being pregnant, like during pregnancy, would affect the baby. And obviously, you know, you've gone through so much to even be pregnant in the first place, then there was this huge guilt around how my mental health could potentially affect that pregnancy. So we were assigned a mental health support worker quite early on, which was good. It was good to have that support there. It was good to know that there was someone that I could talk to. I'm not going to say that it stopped me from being anxious. It didn't at all. It was just like a safety net more than anything, in case I felt myself really spiraling out of control, which there were times during the pregnancy that I could, that did happen. And I really, I really felt like I wasn't in control of what was happening at all. And that's continued after having ED as well. They have been a constant support. I mean, gosh, the people that have been coming to our house, it's been overwhelming, the amount of visitors that we've had from people. But as much as it's felt overwhelming, it's been incredible that we've had that support there. So I'm super, super grateful.
That is so good to hear, because as you mentioned there, you know, on Instagram, you've heard varying degrees of success or failure with regards to the support people have received. And I know that I've had similar conversations with people. So it's, it kind of, it, yeah, it, it makes me so happy to hear that you did receive that support. It's so important to anyone who is struggling to get that support, you know, like, I hate to say it, but, you know, like, I asked for support and I didn't get it. And I think it was because I looked too competent. I wish I'd just burst into tears. You know, just because I'm not crying, it doesn't mean I'm not struggling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you need to burst into tears, if you need to push it and ask again, do. I ended up seeking counselling outside of kind of NHS. I was lucky enough to be able to afford to pay privately for it, because I wasn't given it through the NHS, unfortunately. Like, if I had my time again, would I push a little bit harder? Maybe. And hopefully they would have, well, they would have sorted it out. Like, I didn't have a great midwife anyway. It's a whole different ball game. She was more interested in her retirement. But anyway, that's like a one-off individual. There's a lot of amazing midwives out there, clearly. But no, yeah. So the point is, I highly recommend seeking that support wherever you get it, whether it is privately or through the NHS, because I know that I benefited from it. Like you're saying, you know, that you definitely benefited from it. It's important getting those two lines on the positive, on the test. You know, as we know, it doesn't, the anxiety doesn't stop there. And
no,
I think we bring a lot of the TTC anxiety that we haven't dealt with into our pregnancies. And then if we don't deal with it, then you, but then there's a chance that it's going to, you know, kind of spill over into when we're parenting and sleep deprived and all of that. And I could go on, but I won't. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you then about going from, and I talk about this, and I'm going to explore this a little bit more in the work that I do, the whole mindset of stay in, stay in, stay in, baby, stay in, please grow and be well and stay in, stay in, stay in. And then suddenly you have to think, oh, this baby's got to come out. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's a good thing, you know, but actually getting your head round that complete 360 of stay in for my life's worth, you know, and then actually you're going to come out. How did you feel about the birth? What preparation did you do with regards to the birth and everything?
None, no prep whatsoever. I think we, very early on, Lee and I started to be really worried about the birth. You know, when you've gone into early labour, I honestly can tell you that there was not a day, not a single day, until the day that we went to the hospital to have the baby, there wasn't a single day that I didn't get up and think, what if she comes today? You know, she could come. And I'm talking, you know, I'm talking from like 7-8 weeks onwards, there was not a single day that I didn't feel fear that that could happen, because how we lost Lily and Ava was so traumatic, and still parts of that day or the initial day that I can't talk about. I just can't talk about because it's so traumatic. There are things that I will never ever do again because of how it happened. To hold that in your head, it's massive. it's utterly, utterly massive. So the birth was something that I was really freaked out about because, you know, I had to deliver Ava, our second twin. And I thought, you know, what is this going to bring back? You know, am I going to completely freak out on, you know, it was just too much running through my head about how this was going to affect my mental health, the baby's well-being. I'd suffered some hemorrhaging quite badly after Ava's birth and after a prior miscarriage where I'd been rushed into emergency, into theatre, and I'd lost awful lot of blood. So that all of it was just, you know, so horrific to think about that I think that we made a decision very early to say we need to not do any of those things. So cesarean was the option for us, a planned C-section. It meant that there was an element of calm to it, and it felt less risky. It was taking out the memory or the trigger of the previous trauma, because it would be a different experience. I'm not suggesting that it's less traumatic for some, but for me, that just felt like the right decision to make. But we had to make that decision quite early. You know, I think we talked about it quite early between the two of us, but actually I can remember I had to go for a scan at 21 weeks. And we were told, yeah, we have to make that decision like in the next couple of weeks. You know, we need to know and get that booked in. And that just felt massive because for me, that still felt like, well, but I've still got half of my pregnancy to go yet. I don't know if I'm going to make it that far. I don't know if I should be making decisions about stuff like that yet, because then I'm hoping that we get that far. You know, it's such a conflicting time. You're always having to think so far ahead where we couldn't think that far ahead comfortably. So it was really odd. But the birth was just what we would have hoped for. It was really perfect. It was very calm. Everyone was very kind. We chose our own music. It couldn't have been more perfect. It was the calmest, most serene experience. And I'm so grateful for everybody that was in that room, because they all knew that it needed to be like that. And they did their damnedest to make that happen for us.
That is so good to hear. I can't even tell you. You know, that part of your pregnancy was, like you say, all you could have asked for, ultimately, is just wonderful. I find it amazing, and I assume this happened to you in theatre, how everyone comes over and introduces themselves and tells you what their job is.
Yeah, it's incredible, I really like that.
I loved it.
So nice.
Yeah, it was, yeah, because I was kind of wheeled in an emergency, like it was fine, but yeah, and even in an emergency they was just like, wow. And there is something very calming about it, actually, I have to say, even in a kind of rushed situation, it does bring, yeah, it's really kind of friendly and calming. And if there are words, which I suspect there aren't, but the closest words you can find to how you felt when you first held Edie.
Oh God. I can't even describe it. I really can't.
Oh. Oh.
It was so magic. I can't even put into words. It was just incredible. Oh. It really was incredible. And it didn't feel real, you know? It didn't even feel real that she was actually here. Yeah, it was magic. Oh sorry. I really didn't think I was going to cry. But,
honestly.
I mean, let's just to flip it on its head. I had the worst heartburn. The worst heartburn I've ever experienced in my whole life. From about 15 weeks onwards, it was just, I mean, I couldn't sit at my desk some days. It was so bad. Gaviscon was my best friend. And also acid reflux, throw some of that into the mix as well. That was delicious. And I kept saying to people, does this mean that the baby's going to have loads of hair? And most people were like, no, it's an old wives' tale. Like, it's not, no, she's not going to have loads of hair. And then one midwife, because I had three different midwives. that's another story as well. Midwives are weird. So one of them said, what it is the baby has got like downy hair all over it. And the heartburn is caused by them shredding that downy hair. So basically you're ingesting their hair.
Oh.
I was like, well, that's lovely, isn't it?
That makes me think of like cats and furballs and
and gagging and all. Yeah, awful. So I was like, okay, well, that explains it then. And then thought nothing more of it whilst I suffered this incredibly bad heartburn. And then I can remember I had a sheet up, so I didn't want to see the birth. I was happy not to see them, you know, slicing my nether regions open.
I can understand that.
And Lee's a bit squeamish. And I didn't think that he would watch either, but he did take his big professional camera in there to take some photos, which was a joy. But he poked his head as she was born. He poked his head around the sheet and then quickly withdrew his head and went to me, oh, she's got shitloads of hair. So that was the first words I heard as she was born. But yeah, it was magic, absolutely magic. Oh. And she has got shitloads of hair. It's glorious.
She has got glorious hair. You're absolutely right. Did you know that she was going to be a girl?
Yeah, we had a harmony test done because of what happened with Molly the year before. It was just a risk that we couldn't take. We just needed to know as soon as possible whether, you know, the same thing was going to happen or not. So we did know very early that we were having a girl. And it was a bit of a shock, I have to say. I think we had talked ourselves into it being a boy because we've always had girls. And I think that we were... I think in some ways we were just hoping that the experience, if it was a boy, maybe the experience would be different.
Mm.
I don't know. We didn't really, that's really hard to say that out loud because we didn't really care either way. We just wanted our baby to come home. But I don't know. I think maybe there was just that thing around, well, if it's a boy, will it be different? But it was a girl.
I can understand that. And a lot of that is like, really irrational and like I hope you don't mind me saying that, but it is, but I totally understand it, yeah, because you just think, yeah, well, maybe if it's a boy it'll stay and it will be different, and but she's a girl and she stayed and it was different, and that is incredible. And so she's 3 months old.
Yeah,
I know that we have talked about this a bit, but if you would share about kind of your preparation, I guess, to being a parent to a baby that you have brought home. I think I'm right in saying that you didn't do NCT or anything like that. And the reason for that was because you couldn't admit that you were pregnant. Is that, am I right in saying, describing it like that?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's back to that feeling of not wanting to share your news in case it all goes tits up. And I think the idea of joining an NCT group just felt so uncomfortable. So alien. Right, so alien when you've been through what we've been through. I think, you know, we've spent so long trying to make our family, to bring our baby home, but also during that time it's been really I found it so difficult to be part of conversations that make me feel so sad, and even being around children. You know, it's taken me nearly 3 years from losing the twins to finding it comfortable to be around our niece and nephew. That's a long time, you know, and their family. So the idea of putting myself into an NCT group full of really excited, you know, parents to be, who many of them will have had a wonderful pregnancy. Maybe some of them wouldn't have. Maybe, you know, they've got their own anxieties around stuff. But I felt like we'd be the odd ones out, and maybe people wouldn't understand some of the stuff that we'd been through. I am definitely, still now that she's here, really uncomfortable with the term mum. I find that really hard. I find it really difficult to accept that I am a mum. And this is me, you know, I've found it really hard to be around other mums. You know, I've laughed and joked with people. The only way to get through any of the shit that we've been through is black humour or dark humour, or just to be a bit shitty, really. And, you know, I've always described it as, oh, fucking hell, mums are really fucking boring, aren't they? You know, mum's shit that they talk about is really fucking boring. Sorry for swearing, but, you know.
Oh, God, don't worry about that.
That's how I felt about stuff. And it's a defence mechanism. Of course it is, you know. But now I am one of those mums. And I find that really difficult to accept, to the point where, yeah, I've got no NCT friends that didn't join the group. I have got friends that have got children, but not babies. I haven't joined any baby groups or mum groups for little ones. And I'm really struggling to do that. Yeah, I really find that hard. And I think it's because I wrote a post about this on Instagram a couple of weeks ago. I don't want to lose my infertile identity. Does that make sense? I don't want people just to look at me in the street and think, well, she's got it all, hasn't she? Because I've got the pram and I've got the baby in the pram. Because that's how I used to feel when I would see, you know, mums out together with all of their babies. I'd feel jealous. I'd feel left out. And I don't want people to feel that when they see me with a pram. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's a really difficult feeling.
I can totally understand that. And I think if I can just kind of comment on that in two parts. I remember when I was pregnant and I went to a cricket dinner with Bob, who is an avid cricketer. And I got sandwiched between these kind of two women, and they're a bit older than me, you know, much older kids than I was going to have, you know, kind of like they'd got down to it much earlier. And it was all baby chat, you know? And I kind of, I don't know whether it's because I had spent 7 years trying, and during that 7 years, I had really had to kind of find me. And we had taken a break at one point, as you know, and I'd really kind of refound myself because I was, you know, ruined ultimately. And I'd had to really refine myself and rebuild who I was as an individual, my own identity, because, you know, at that time I wasn't anywhere near the person that I wanted to be, predominantly because I wasn't a mum, but the impact that it had kind of in my whole world, really. And I was like, oh my God, well, someone asked me like what I do or who I am other than being pregnant. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then fast forward, we had, so as you know, like I run the hangout, and we had a hangout meetup just several weeks ago, and we were in Regent's Park, and for all intents and purposes, we were 10, 12, 15 mums there with little ones. And it really was a joyous occasion. It was amazing. And the sun shone for us. And it was just heaven. It was everything almost that I've ever wanted. And this was a group of women who got it, you know, as well. So these were like, even though they're not my old friends, like these are true friends. And there is a deep and intimate knowledge that we have of each other, even without sharing like all of our stories, we just know. And just away from us, a few meters away, there was a woman there with, I think she just had one baby, I'm not sure, I don't know if she had two. And I really felt for her, and I felt a little bit embarrassed. And like, hear me out, especially if you are one of those women who was at that meetup, that we, you know, about what people might think of us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't want her to look at us and think, oh my God, look at them with, they're all like so happy and so, you know, they've got their little ones. And, you know, if she had been through something, which she might not have been, it might not have crossed her mind. She might have thought, oh, look, they look like they're having fun. Brilliant. And I almost, felt embarrassed that people might look at us and think that and feel hurt because you know, because of their trauma. Do you know what I mean? There was absolutely nothing about the group that I was embarrassed about, like I say. Does that make sense? Am I making sense by
that? Definitely. It's that feeling of...
You want to put up a sign?
Yeah, I want to scream at people that how hard it was. I just, I want people to, you know that this was really difficult to get to this point, because I'm really conscious all the time of how things have made me feel in the past. And I don't want people to feel, I don't want how I now appear to make people feel like that. You know, I'm really, really conscious of not wanting to cause anyone any pain, albeit unintentionally. And it's exactly that feeling of I just can remember just looking at groups of parents and feeling so sad, you know, so sad that we might never get that. And that's what we'd wanted for so long. And I don't want anyone to look at me and feel like that. And that's why it's really hard to be in that position.
No, I get it. It's a bit like when people find out they're pregnant and within the TTC community, and it's that like, oh my God, I don't want to be smug. I don't want to be, you know, like rubbing it in people's faces. That, and it's a similar thing like now that Edie's here, you know, that you don't want that to be the case. And
no.
And unfortunately what that does is it's you taking that on, isn't it? Which is obviously going to have an impact on you predominantly and your kind of enjoyment of what you're going through. And so how can I, as your friend, how can you, as the person dealing with this, how can you, like, can you see a way past that, I guess?
I don't know right now. I'm still trying to figure that out in my head.
And Edie's only 3 months old. You know, this is early days, you know, I like for anyone, for any new mum, you know, there's a lot of sleep deprivation. There's a lot of, what the fuck am I doing?
so much of that. You know?
So for you to have an answer right now, honestly, I would be like, oh my gosh, wow, that's amazing. So yeah, I don't want you to kind of, carry on. Sorry.
No, I don't know. It's honestly, it's me struggling with the concept of mum as a title for myself. That's a difficult thing for me to work through. And I don't know if there's many people that will fully understand that as well, you know, and it's like, it's not like I don't have friends that aren't parents. It's not that, you know, I have, but it's this idea of going to a baby sensory class. I know that for a lot of people, when they become, you know, mums, they're really looking forward to going to things like that with their children. And I'm dreading it. Not because I don't want her to enjoy it, but just because I just don't know how it's going to make me feel. I have gone to swimming, but the swimming feels really different because, I'm not being funny, you turn up for a swim session. She went for one, her first lesson 2 weeks ago. You know, you've got to get in the, you've got to get them ready. You've got to get yourself ready. You've got to get in the pool. You know, you've got to hope that they don't blare the whole time they're in there because it's cold. You know, there's too much to think about. You're not there to make friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what I'm there for. I'm there to get her into the water, to get her used to it. And then I've got the stress of getting her out of the water and then her screaming the whole time because she's freezing and then getting her back to the car.
Oh God. Everyone being wet at the right time and everyone being dry at the right time. And oh my, where'd you put, oh my, like for anyone who hasn't taken their little one swimming yet, like, yeah, be prepared. Swimming was hell. Like, not the actual swimming, that was fine. Once you're in the pool, it's fine. But the changing situation, oh my goodness, that is...
Yeah, yeah, the swimming's the easy bit. It's the logistics that's shit.
Yes, yes. But like you say, that is an excellent distraction from that kind of chatty time, perhaps.
Oh yeah, there is no time to chat, and that's fine. I'm cool with that, and I'm making myself out. I can hear myself saying this, and I'm like, gosh, you're such a miserable old toad, aren't you? You don't want to make friends with people. It's not. I'm really social. I love friends. I've got loads of friends. I really like friends. I just don't know how I feel about mum friends right now. It is such a blockage for me. It's such a barrier. I think I've had some really difficult experiences in the past, of feelings of isolation from groups of friends that have had children. And I'm struggling to now see myself as part of one of those groups and accept that I have to do stuff like that. I don't know how to work through that yet. I guess at some point I'm just going to have to jump in with 2 feet and do it and see what happens.
Yeah. And like, I'm going to kind of make light of this because I can't help it, because of a conversation that you and I had the other day when you were over at my house. You'll probably walk out like loving all of them and having a great time. Whereas I went to groups thinking, hi, I might make some mates, and didn't make any.
I don't know what to say. I'm just good at making friends.
Show off. I hasten to add that after we had had that conversation, I did go to the park and actually made a new friend. I have a message. I must message her.
Oh, see, this is why. You need to message friends. You know, that's how you keep friends.
Clearly, I'm not very good at making new friends. No, but you're a whiz. So when you are ready... I am genuinely confident. I know, kind of, I laugh just because we were talking about that a while ago. Genuinely confident that you will make them. But I hear it. Like, people were just, age is a thing for me. You know, situation. Having, for me, you know, one child versus people who have 2, 3, you know, it's their however many children they've got, this is their number, what's it called? And then some of the really nice but unfortunately flippant conversations when you've been through kind of anything like what we've been through, you know, it's just a different level, isn't it? So
it's all a bit sensitive, isn't it, still? You know, there's all those. I remember I watched Sophie, the infertile midwife. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, my brain went dead there. Yeah, lovely Sophie. I watched her stories a week or so ago where she had been to a group where, you know, lots of new mums, and they'd asked her if Percy was her first. And, you know, she was talking really openly about how difficult she'd found it to answer. And actually she just said yes. And then she felt really guilty about that afterwards. And you know, it's things like that it's really difficult for us when we've been through these traumas, when we've been through such horrible things, to know how to answer those questions and, you know, to say the right thing without upsetting people or, you know, shocking people because they don't know all of your backstory. You know, you know you've forgotten, they haven't been watching your Instagram for the last 5 years. And they don't know how rude, why not?
But, you know, don't you know where I am?
This shit about me. You know. But, you know, choosing to tell how you choose to tell that story or how you choose to answer those questions is really different for everybody, and it will be different every time that someone asks you that question as well. But yeah, it does come up, and then you're like, oh, how much do you want to share with everybody about it? There are going to be days where you question, you know, how uncomfortable do you want to make these people feel? Because I'm not being funny. If someone asks me, you know, if is Edie your first, sometimes they're going to get the, well, yeah, she is, yeah. And sometimes they're going to get, no, she's not. And then I'm going to dump some crap on you that you might not be prepared for. But
yeah.
Do you want to be that person all the time as well? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess with anything, you'll find your tribe, right? You know, we've all found our tribe in this community. You'll find those people that you gel with at mum groups.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of them will be people who have been through, you know, something and understand, and some of them won't, but they will just be the right person, you know, yeah. And they will understand in a different capacity. So, yeah. And maybe like listening to you talk, maybe kind of sitting it out the first 3 months when it is so intense and it is so life changing and it is so kind of sleep deprived. And it is, you know, that maybe what you've done is exactly right. You've kind of sat it out for now and got yeah. your head together. Wait until you're just feeling a bit more kind of in the groove, so to speak. And then you can broach that next step, you know, with a clearer head and make the decision yeah. when you're ready.
I feel like we know each other now. You know, we've had this time, you know, me, Lee and Edie, we've had this time together to just suss each other out, you know, like work out who she is as a person. She's kind of working out who we are, and, you know, working out all of our roles. It was easier to do that without throwing something else into the mix that you've got to worry about. You know, that kind of like that outside influence kind of thing. And, you know, I've got a lovely group of friends. I mean, obviously I've got you, my lovely friend, and I've got wonderful friends. I really have got amazing friends who have been checking in on me. You know, and I've got a lovely bunch of friends where I live in Saffron Walden who some have been through similar traumas and some haven't. And all have been equally as supportive and understanding of our situation. And I'm really, really grateful for that. Really grateful. So I'm really lucky. I'm really, really lucky. But I do know that I do need to make some friends that are going through the same time frame as we are. You know, you need people that are up in the middle of the night like you are. You know, they're learning this as we go along. You need people like that. And I know that I really need to find my tribe. Mm. And I will, but in my own time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kelly. Honestly, it's just like, it is always a pleasure to talk to you, but to have you on the podcast is a unique pleasure. It really is so special. And to have met Edie and just to know that she exists. Do you know what I mean? And as much as I hear that you are struggling with the term, you know, but that you are mum to Edie, and I know you're mum to all of your girls, like, don't get me wrong, but that you are physically parenting Edie in your home is just, honestly, it's just gives me such joy. It really does.
Thank you. It is... Yeah, it's magic. It really is. I can't describe it any other way. And I'm really grateful for you having me on. And I just hope some of the stuff that I've said resonates with people. And it's not just me that's a bit weird.
Definitely not.
Because that would make me, it would make me feel better if I wasn't just the weird one.
Okay, so the chief cheese. Oh, no. Yeah, the chief cheese. Yeah, head chief over. Cheese. Just say, you're not weird. Or
please,
I'm weird
do
too.
That.
Yeah. Do it. Oh, bless you. Right. I'm going to let you go so that we can have a little bit of an evening this evening, hopefully, because Ren is not going through a very good sleep phase at the moment. Hopefully, yeah, both of us will get a few hours at least. And yeah, just sending you a huge squeeze and so much love. And I can't wait to see you soon. All right then, my lovely. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.